Hi, this is Chris Wood from the Taos News. Even though I grew up a multi-generation newspaper boy, my real first love is magazines. Ever since I was a kid poring over Sports Illustrated, and through years of reading titles like The New Yorker, I've always loved the feel and presentation of a great magazine. There's no better local magazine than Discover Taos. Our special 50th anniversary Discover Taos is on stands now. Read about four women guiding the stories of Taos art. Get the dish on where local chefs like Wilkes Medley eat when they're not manning their own kitchens. And start planning your summer music hit lists. From the Avett Brothers and Kit Carson Park to the Big Barn Dance, we've got the scoop. Check it all out in this summer's Discover Taos, on stands everywhere now.
Welcome to Voices of Taos. My name is Laura Martin-Baseman, and I'm the producer of this podcast from the Taos News. Every week, we will be bringing you a voice from our Taos community.
Hi, it's Lynn Robinson again from Tempo, and I'm sitting here with Christina, a.k.a. Kiki Sivanala, who is a filmmaker, a writer. Kiki is a performer. She's all of it. And she's got a radio show at KNCE, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, which is very popular. Hi, Kiki. It's great to have you here today.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you so much for having me today.
So let's go back. We've known each other for 20 years.
Something like that, yeah.
And when I first met you, you were editing film with my daughter Genevieve for David Schweitzer.
Yes.
Who worked with Woody Allen for many years as a cinematographer,
Well, I mean,
correct?
He's prolific, actually. Yeah. He's constantly working. He's amazing like that, yeah.
So that's when I first met you.
Yes.
And you had just finished your degree at film school.
Yeah.
In Texas. At Austin, correct?
Yes. UT Austin.
So how did you get into film?
I always wanted to have some kind of part in that. When I was young, I wanted to be an actor. I quickly realized that I'm far too self-conscious, or I don't know, many actors are very self-conscious, but I'm self-conscious on the stage, right? And that's not, I never felt like I was a talented actor. And I found myself in theater class, you know, in high school, working behind the scenes mostly. Like I did some acting, but I just didn't feel like I felt like I belonged in a behind the scenes kind of thing. And so I was like, well, maybe, and I've always wanted to create stories, you know, like I'm an avid reader since I was very young and would stay up all night reading, you know, fantasy and science fiction and just all of these stories. Really, I wanted to be the person who created those. And so I decided that because I can see the story visually and also like I know what I want it to, like what kind of stories I want to touch people with, you know. I have this idea in film school, actually, they say, well, and it's kind of a cynical perspective, I think, but they say, you know, well, what makes your movie so great that someone wants to pay $10 to see it? And I remember being in my advanced screenwriting class, and there was this kid who was in the class, and God, he was one of those guys that just like, it was a small class, you know, a round table kind of session every couple times a week. And he just got on my last nerve, like all the time. But when my teacher asked me that, what, you know, who would want to pay 10 bucks to see this movie? This guy, he spoke right up and he said, I would see this movie. And I was like, yeah, that guy. I was like, I don't know, me, people like me. But so, yeah, what I decided to go to film school because I felt like that was, you know, the University of Texas has a really good film school. And the reason is because they have quite a bit of money and they have access to equipment, which back then, you know, this is the late 90s. It was before digital video was cinematic in its look. And so you had to shoot on film if you wanted to have a specific look. And so I, that's why I went to UT, was to get gain knowledge and how to be a better filmmaker, for sure, but also literally just to have access to cameras and various equipment that I would otherwise not have access to be able to make the movies that I wanted to make.
So fast forward a bit, now you're back in Taos, where you did spend quite a bit of your childhood because your mother was a longtime devotee of Neem Karoli Baba and one of the founding members of the ashram here in Taos.
Yes, she definitely had a big part to play in the development of the ashram here in Taos, and that is why we came here when I was 6 years old. It's the first time we came.
And so you had this ongoing relationship with Taos throughout your childhood, and what made you come back here after school?
I had, you know, we lived here when I was young, and then we moved to Austin, like, literally a week before I started high school. So I went to high school in Austin. But we would come back, you know, for the Mahasamadhi Bhandara in September, or for Guru Purnima in the summer, for various festivals, you know, throughout the year. We would come back at least once a year. And so I maintained a connection with people here, you know. Like, I have long-term friendships that I've maintained since I was 10 or 11.
A child.
Yeah.
Well, and let me digress. Your mother was an academic.
Yeah.
She was a renowned scholar of Sanskrit. Can you talk about that, growing up with this pretty extraordinary mom?
You know, it's a little interesting to be the child of someone who is so powerful and so brilliant and bold and just incredible, you know, but sometimes she was, in a lot of ways, kind of like an icon, you know. Oh, excuse me. But sometimes you just want a mom, you know. Sometimes you don't need this brilliant intellect or this powerful activist or this amazing person who gets everything done. Sometimes you just want a mom. And she was great, you know. She loved all of her children, and she really, like, did her best to raise us as a single mother going through grad school and doing, you know, like, she really did her best. And she was just brilliant. And, you know, she took all of her children to India at least once. I went with her when I was 13 years old, and that was in 1992. India has changed quite a bit since then. She was living there full time. Let me backtrack. Can I tell you her story? My mother was raised in Abilene, Texas. She was the daughter of one of the most decorated enlisted men in the European theater of World War II. He had 3 Purple Hearts, I think 2 Silver Stars and 3 Bronze Stars, and I don't even know all the different medals that he was awarded. My grandmother, she also was an intellectual. She ended up becoming a professor of French-German philosophy and linguistics. She taught at Angelo State University, but during the war, she was born and raised in Brussels, Belgium, and so she lived in occupied Belgium. And so these, you know, the American GIs, they came and liberated them. And I guess that she spoke, you know, my grandmother Jeanine, she spoke 5 languages, and so she was working some kind of, like, info booth thing or something. I'm not really sure exactly how my grandparents met. But the night that they met, my grandfather asked my grandmother to marry him. And they were married 28 days later. And then they lived in Belgium for about a year and then moved back to Texas. And then, you know, had 3 little girls. And my mom was the middle child. And she was a rebel and would get into fights. And with her, you know, I think they sent her to reform school for her sophomore year. And then she went to live with some friends of the family in Monroe, Louisiana, and then she was expelled.
Now, let's just give a little backstory here. This was the 60s.
Yeah.
The country was in turmoil around the Vietnam War. The civil rights movement, but all of it was impacting the way young people in America were responding.
Right.
And so she was part of a greater wave.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And she took off to India.
Well, it was an accident. She even would say it was an accident that she ended up in India, which I, growing up hearing these stories, was like, that's crazy. But like she had this story. So she was sent to Belgium upon high school graduation. She was given a graduation gift to go to Europe and stay with family for the summer. And she ended up, you know, Belgium even now is a little bit, honestly, it's just a little boring. I mean, it's cool.
Good food.
I mean, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. Yeah, but, you know, like, I think there was some adventure calling her or something. And so she hitchhiked around Europe. She went to France and Spain and Italy. And then she ended up in Istanbul on the steps of the American Express with $5 in her pocket. And the money that she was expecting to come to the American Express hadn't shown up. And she's crying on the steps. And some guy in some, I think like a Citroën, just a little car, was like, hey, why don't you forward it to this next town and come with me? And she was like, sure, I have nothing else to do. And she ended up hitchhiking to India, which is crazy. I think that she rode on the back of a motorcycle through Iran. She has a story about coming to the border of Afghanistan, and the border was closed, and this guy in a big flowing black robes took him to the top of a minaret, and I think they like smoked some hashish or something. And then the next day the passport office opened and they got their stamp, and she said that Afghanistan was the most beautiful country in the world that she'd ever been to. Women were, you know, it was 1970, but, you know, women were businesswomen, lawyers, judges, you know, they're walking around with their 60s.
Pre-Taliban. Absolutely.
Pre-revolution, yeah.
And a lot of people crossed. That was part of the passage into India.
So the story that I grew up hearing was, oh, I went this, and this, and then I went here. And then in Afghanistan, she got really sick. And so she got, like, she was staying at some hostel, and the woman who was running the hostel took care of her and taught her, you know, eat yogurt, take psyllium husk yogurt and psyllium husk will really, like, keep you not as much with the deli belly or the dysentery or whatever. And so she was there for several months. And then one day she met these four guys who they had their own story, which is kind of crazy. But she met these guys who were like, oh, yeah, we just came from India a day ago. And she was like, wait a second, you were in India a day ago? And so that she says that that's the first time she actually took out a map at 18 years old on the other side of the world. And she didn't even look at a map. She just kept going.
And now let's backtrack a little bit.
So then she went to India.
She went to India. And you have been working on a documentary about this journey and her experience in India.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Sure. The documentary is called Meri Ramrani, which is Hindi. It means my Ramrani. And my mother's name was, we haven't even said her name. Her name was Dr. Yvette Claire Rosser, but she also went by Ramrani, which is the name that Neem Karoli Baba gave her when she met him in the 70s in India. She'd, you know, of course, that was the time of, you know, the 60s and the early 70s were the time dubbed, quote unquote, the hippie trail, right? And that's when a lot of Westerners were going overland from Europe to India.
And South Africa, where I grew up. My own cousin was there for several years in Rishikesh, so I know.
Okay, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a unique time in human history because we had vehicles. You know, we had decent cars and you know, Volkswagen vans and whatever that could actually make the trip in a relatively quick, you know, it's not like, yeah, sure, Alexander the Great showed up in Afghanistan or in India and he was met with elephants and you know, sadhus banging drums, but like,
it
was a little easier of a trail.
It usually started in Amsterdam or Greece.
Right.
And then went east.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the movie Meri Ramrani is the first part. It's in kind of three parts. The first part is about the hippie trail, because then, you know, the year I was born was both 1979 was both when the Iranian Revolution and the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. So that kind of travel overland to India from Europe will that's not happening.
And
not
those
in
countries
my lifetime.
Have been destroyed, and the culture as well.
Yeah, and even those big Buddhas that my mom was so lucky to actually be able to see in person have been destroyed. And that was, you know, more than 20 years ago at this point. But so that's the first part, is the experience, all the miracles and tragedies of that experience going overland and then being in India, which is a completely different world from here, you know. All the things that happened to all these people, I want to really delve into those experiences. But the second part of the movie is my mom's life work. So it's Neem Karoli Baba. He gave her the name Ramrani, but he said, Ramrani, when you go back to America, you study and you work to make India and Hinduism better understood and respected. And so it's my, you know, I want to continue her. She devoted her life to that work. And I want to, you know, clarify misconceptions about Hinduism. Like, for instance, the caste system is, as it is in use, is actually, you know, it comes from hundreds of years of Mughal Empire, and then the British Raj was like, oh, this is a great way to divide and conquer. So it's actually not like Hindu in its essence, right? It's layer upon layer of colonialism. And so that's just one aspect of it. But, you know, I really want to get to clarify those misconceptions.
And this film is going to be ongoing. It's an ongoing project.
Yeah. I'm actually shooting an interview with Jai Utal, Grammy-nominated ecstatic singer, next week.
That's so
and
fantastic.
He was a good friend of my mom's, too.
Now, currently, you're also working with True Kids One.
I am. I love it.
Let's talk about what you're doing with the kids in this community.
It's such a great organization. True Kids One, you know, we work with youth, tech, media. We teach tech. We teach tech tools. We actually pay kids to come and learn and to create media on their own. I mean, we mentor them. And then we have an entire STEM program where, I mean, we've got some amazing electronic engineers who are teens.
I saw some of their films the other night, and I was blown away.
Yeah, we had our Future of Community. The Future of Our Community was about a week ago or 10 days ago or something, and it was incredible. All these kids, they made those films on their own. I mean, really, like, we have three filmmakers on staff, myself, Pete Monroe, and Daniela Cervantes, and we're all, you know, dedicated to, we love making movies, but then getting to work with these brilliant, brilliant, amazing, creative kids is just so rewarding. I mean, it brings me so much joy. And it's definitely a job that was like literally made for me. You know, I love working with kids, and I get to work with like the brilliant goth kids, or, you know, like they're not all the goth kids, but I'm like, my people.
Exactly. And then you also have a radio show.
Yes.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Yeah. I started Girls Just, so KNCE started in November of 2014, and about a week later I started Girls Just Want to Have Fun. So it's one of the longest running shows on KNCE.
And you're juggling all this, the kids, the radio.
You have to write a grant.
Your documentary. Yeah. I mean, super kiki.
Yeah.
You also ran my daughter's campaign for council.
I did. I was very nervous about that.
You were Genevieve's campaign manager.
Yeah, Genevieve asked me. She said, I think your skills as a film producer will translate. And I was like, oh, I guess. And I did it, and it was the most stressful production I've ever had in my life.
But you did it.
But we did it.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
What's next, Kiki?
Well, I'm going to keep working on My Ramrani. And anyone who wants to know more about the film can go to myramrani.com. That's spelled myramrani.com to check it out. And if you so choose, make a donation. But But yeah, I'm going to keep working on the movie and just, you know, keep working at True Kids One because I love it. It's so, so incredibly rewarding for me.
And so, for those kids.
And for those
clearly
kids.
Clearly they're
yeah.
having a blast working with you.
No, it's a
you.
Great organization. The amount of times that I've heard people say, oh, I wish I'd had a True Kids One when I was that age. And me personally, I'm like, I wish that I'd had an organization like this. I wish that I'd had a me, like a mentor like me, you know, like, oh, God, the way my life trajectory would have been probably very different.
It's a fantastic organization, and it's such a gift to this community yeah. and the kids in this community.
Well, and everyone who works there is so very committed to that mission. You know, like, it's just a joy to be there. I love it.
And you can feel that and sense it with the stuff that's coming out of there.
Yeah, we make some cool stuff.
Very
you know,
cool
documentaries
stuff.
About the bridge that are pretty heavy duty. Like, we're not, you know,
and
using kid guns.
And Angelina is our intern.
Angelina is amazing,
she
right?
She is amazing.
Angelina Burns Diaz is incredible. Yeah. I mean, we have just a large roster of extraordinary teenagers, for sure.
Thank you so much for joining us, Kiki. It's been just a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much, Lynn, for having me. It's been a joy to be here today.
Thank you for joining us for Voices of Taos, a podcast by the Taos News, produced by Laura Martin Baseman. Our music was produced and arranged by Miles Bonney, featuring musicians Francisco Velarde, Ruben Hernandez, and Margot Macias. Please join us next week for another episode of Voices of Taos.